Hi, welcome everyone. We're delighted today to have Victoria Costina from Caltech tell us about information performance trade-offs in control.
Thanks, you all. So I can just start. Thank you, Yuval, very much for having me here again. As usual, it's a pleasure to be visiting. And today we'll talk about the fundamental trade-offs between information and performance in control systems. And the application I'd like you to have in mind is the following. So suppose you are a person who is trying to control a stochastic system, which you can imagine as a flying drone, and you're trying to control it while standing on the ground. So you need to communicate with the system via a rate constrained communication channel, which can be noisy, wireless channel. So communication is expensive. It costs to communicate with the system. It costs you in battery life. And what we would like to understand here is that what is the minimum communication rate? So what is the minimum number of bits per second then that you need to send to your system in order to meet the control objective? And the system is modeled as a stochastic dynamic system. So XT here is the state of the system, which you can, in a drone case, you can imagine it being the vector of position, velocities, accelerations. And UT here is the control. So that's the signal that is applied to the system. And then the goal, our goal here is to understand how to design the best encoder and controller for communication over this noisy channel in order to control our system to within a given performance objective. And I'm going to make it much more formal as the talk goes on. So this is what we are after. So we would like to understand this trade-off. So we'd like to characterize this curve, which is the trade-off between rate, communication rate, and the cost. And we would expect that it would look something like that. So cost is the penalty that measures how inaccurately we are able to control the system. So the higher cost is worse. And we are interested in this trade-off from information theoretic perspective. So we are not limiting our control strategies or our encoder and decoder to be linear or to have any particular structure. So we are interested in this fundamental trade-off. So what in principle can be achievable among all causal strategies. And this is a well-studied problem. So many people looked at this before. Most of the prior work has been focused on stability analysis. So what it means is that these people have focused on what is the minimum rate required to keep the system stable, which means that to keep the cost bounded, so less than infinity. So in other words, they determined what is the asymptote that this red curve tends to as the cost increases to infinity.
So what was the motivation for them to study the
non-trained
drones?
What was the motivation to study?
I missed the first slide.
Oh yeah. The motivation is to understand what are the best information theoretic trade-offs achievable in the system, in distributed control system. And one very natural application is when you're trying to control a flying drone over a wireless channel.
I saw there was work in 99, so what was their motivation?
What was their motivation?
It's just an example. Other lots of systems.
Yeah, I guess it's just a very natural question to ask. Right? Because people have been studied control systems forever, then it's just very natural to ask from a theoretical perspective. So what happens if we now have rate limited communication?
Can you just say again what was the thing you just said about the asymptote?
Oh, the asymptote. Yeah, so stability. So as I said, a big body of work, of prior work, focused on stability analysis. So in other words, they focused on determining where this curve tends to as the cost increases.
So if your drone crashes, it's cost infinity, basically. An unstable system is infinite cost.
So they looked at the minimum, the absolute minimum communication required in order to keep it stable, right? So which is anything less than infinity. Okay, and then this asymptote is actually also known, and this comes from control theory. So and what we are doing here is we want to study the entire trade-off. Some work has also focused on bounded system noise. So this is a non-stochastic problem setting where we assume that the system noise is bounded, and then it simplifies analysis a lot because you don't need to get into those stochastic issues. And then also there has been some interesting work on linear quadratic Gaussian control. So here, what we would like to do, we would like to step away from the assumption of Gaussianness. So we would like to study systems that have noise that are not necessarily Gaussians. And again, in contrast to prior work, we would like to understand the entire trade-off rather than just the asymptotes. And it's a difficult problem. And here I try to outline why I think the problem is difficult. Even though it's been thoroughly studied, it's still not solved. And here are some of the reasons why. So what we are trying to do here, we are essentially trying to bring together information theory and control. And the underlying assumptions in the two fields are very different. So usual assumptions that we see in information theory are the following, that the source is stationary and memoryless. Then we usually assume that we can do block coding, so we can code over long blocks. We also allow large block lengths or large delays. And the data is static, meaning that the data is something given to you, given to the encoder. And the encoder cannot change the data. So the only task of the encoder is to take this data and to convey it to the destination. So in control, everything is vastly different. So a successful coding strategy for control would have infinite memory, right? Because your drone position would have memory, obviously. So any code that you would think of should take advantage of that memory. And instead of block coding, something more like convolutional coding should be used, where instead of looking into blocks of symbols, we are really looking at a stream of data that keeps coming, and then you have this infinite memory, and then somehow you need to design a strategy to take into account that memory, but to do it very fast without allowing those large delays, which are catastrophic for coding systems. Obviously, if you don't control your drone for some time, it's just going to crash. So we cannot, unfortunately, allow any delay, really, in the control systems. And the final point is that what's very different and very interesting from a technical point of view is that in control systems, the encoder can modify the data encoded at the next step. So let's look again at this picture. Right. So what happens is the encoder, whatever decision it makes at time t, actually affects the system state at time t plus one. And so why this feedback loop? So there is this very interesting dependence here that that sort of kills this separation between communication and control. Okay, so that's the final point why these problems are in fact challenging. And let me now introduce everything formally. So this was just a high-level overview. So formally, this is the baby version of a problem. So let's just focus on a scalar system, which evolves according to this linear equation. So xt is the state at time t, a is the system gain, and ut is the control signal, and then vt is an iid noise sequence, which we just assume that it has a density, and it's the samples are identically distributed and independent of each other, but we don't assume anything beyond that. So it's not necessarily Gaussian, or it might not be bounded. Okay, unlike the majority of relevant literature.
We know A.
Yes. So for this setting, we assume that we know A. So we know, we know the system equation. We know A. We don't know VT. This is a random variable, and we need to design UT based on everything that was observed up to that point. Okay, so formally, we would like to choose the encoding sequence, the decoding sequence, and the control sequence so as to minimize the control cost, which is, in this case, mean square deviation from zero, which we are measuring in this way. Okay, so it's time averaged normalized deviation from the target where we want to bring our system, which we can, without loss of generality, assume that the target is zero. And this then would measure how badly really we are doing. So the goal is to minimize this thing, subject to this causality constraints, right? Because you need to choose the decoding sequence and the control sequence, taking advantage of everything you have seen up to that point, but not in the future. Okay, and let's look at what is known. Without rate constraints, now let's look at the unstable system. So if the system is stable, really, then there is not much to do here because you don't need to control it. It just stabilizes on its own. All right, so let's look at the unstable system. What is the best control action that you can do if we have infinite communication rate? And it's well known in control literature that the best you can do is just cancel what you are seeing, basically, and scale it appropriately. Okay, this results in the mean square cost equal to variance of your noise. And it's a very well-known result. It's not perhaps immediate that you can see that, but you can write down the recursion and show that indeed you cannot do any better.
No, you're claiming that this is the best you can do.
This is the best. This is the absolute best. It's well-known that this is the absolute best you can do, even if you have the best you can do without rate constraints. So if you have infinite communication rate.
What do you mean by rate constraints?
Rate constraints, I haven't really introduced those yet, but okay. Intuitively, it's the number of bits that you can send over this channel that's the next step.
I just wanted to query that you said it's not obvious that this is the best.
In this case, it's really obvious that's the best you can do.
What is MSC?
Mean square cost. So mean square cost is what I call this expression. Yeah. So the best mean square cost that you can attain is that.
VT is IID.
VT is IID. Okay. So let's talk now about communication constraints. The function we are looking at is defined as follows. So this is called the rate cost or cost rate function. And so we are looking at the minimum cost compatible with information rate R. So that's our mean square cost. And we are looking at minimizing this value over all encoders, encoding and decoding strategies and control strategies, such that all of them are causal. So UI belongs to the sigma algebra generated by everything that it had observed so far. And the and then there is this mutual information constraint between the encoded value, the decoded value, given the past.
So UI in sigma algebra, you wrote GI, but you mean G1 through GI? Or G, oh,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
G, means the, yeah. The everything.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. So it's for all I's. So we want to find, yeah, we want to find the minimum over all sorts of such strategies. Yeah, from one to t minus one in this case. So this constraint captures the communication constraint, and it has an operational meaning. And I'm going to talk about this a little later.
So could you just remind me again, what are U, F, and G? I mean, you told us about
that. UI, yeah, let's go back to the picture. FI is the encoder signal.
So that's a map of F. But are these things maps or just the actual signals?
Those are signals. Or this could be a stochastic mapping. So FT is a stochastic mapping based on everything it had observed so far. Uh-huh. To the input, to the channel input alphabet. And then similarly, GT is the current channel output, and UT is the control signal.
And F, random, what you actually said.
G is what you receive, and U is the...
So GT is what
is
you... Yeah, FT is what you send, GT is what you receive, and UT is your control.
Okay, and now could we go back to that minimizer?
Sure.
Enlightenment.
So G super I is all the G's until
GI. So all the G's. So UI, FI, GI for all I's. Yeah, so all of them.
UI.
And so we want to find this joint minimum.
But the it's this last part. So the joint information between F and G is G.
Right, so okay, let me just go back to this. So that's what we're minimizing over. The encoding sequence, the decoding sequence, the control sequence, all causal strategies. So UI, GI, and FI can only depend on what they have observed up to point I, and not on the future. And then there is this mutual information constraint. So this measures the mutual information between the channel input, the channel output, based on everything we have observed up to that point.
I find this confusing because it doesn't seem to be saying anything about the channel.
Yeah, because we're minimizing. We're finding the best channel. We're finding the best channel.
But the information between FI and GI together with G super I minus 1 isn't about the channel.
That's exactly about the channel. It's conditional on GI minus 1. It's the amount of mutual information between the input and the output of the channel.
Conditional in the past. But you're bringing up...
Oh, I see. Between FI and GI conditional.
In the past, yes, and here we are looking at the minimum over all channels, actually. So we are looking at the best possible channel. That's so we're not fixing the channel, in fact, here. So instead, we're minimizing over the best channels, and we're looking at this absolute minimum. So what is, even if we have the best possible channel, what is the best that we can do?
So it's a bound more than a natural strategy, because you, in fact, you don't choose your channel.
Exactly, that's why I'm saying... I will talk later about its operational meaning.
Often you do get to choose your channel. You have a restriction, You have a restriction on how many bits you can transmit, but exactly the mapping. When you're transmitting R bits, but then you have a mapping that will.
Absolutely. Coding, that's what coding does, right? So coding designs.
Often you design the channel.
It's designing the channel.
If I designed it, I would design it with no noise.
The problem is how many bits you can transmit. You can transmit only R bits.
Yeah,
because...
Yeah,
yeah. It's fine. Yeah.
Yeah, so the problem is exactly that. How, like, this problem setting, that's what it's saying. How do we design the best channel that can transmit only R bits? How do we design such best channel mapping? I'm subject to this rate constraint. And the best in the sense of this mean square error. And then we can invert this function and take the limit. And then we define the rate cost as the minimum R, such that the limb slope of this BT of R doesn't exceed your target cost B. Okay, so all we did here is we inverted it and we take the limit in the infinite time horizon. So what we ask is, what is the minimum rate compatible with operating cost B in the limit of infinite time? And that's what one of our main results says. It says that the rate cost function is lower bounded by this very simple expression. So as you see, you have log A here. So that's the system gain, so the parameter of the system. Then you have this B here. The B is your target cost. And it also depends on the statistics of the noise through the variance of the noise and the entropy power of the noise. Okay, so these two quantities, so yeah, the entropy power is defined as follows. It can be computed from the statistics of the noise. So if we plot this formula, this is approximately what we get. So this is the cost here, and that's the output, the quantizer output entropy, or the rate cost function, and it looks something like that. So and as I said, there are two asymptotes, so that's the variance of V. So you cannot do any better than that, even if you had infinite communication rate. And that's the log A limit. So you cannot do any, if you need at least log A bits in order to be able to stabilize the system with any cost.
I'm still trying to understand something with the graph. So as your rate increases, the cost.
The cost decreases, yes, absolutely. Because the cost is the penalty, right? It measures how inaccurate you are able to control your system. Okay, and of course, so if this was what was known previously, so now we know a lot more about these fundamental trade-offs. And of course, because once we know the entire curve, then we can have insights saying something like, okay, if the data rate falls below one knot per sample, then you're actually going to incur a massive penalty in the cost because the rate cost function here is almost flat, whereas increasing the rate from 1 to 3 knots per sample brings a lot of improvement. So it kind of gives you some operational idea about where you might want to operate. And the bound is probably attainable, and I'm going to show you that in the following. But now I would like to focus on this asymptote, just to show you some intuition of why this is indeed the absolute minimum number of bits per channel use that you can spend. And this is really not any proof, it's just some very wrong intuition, which is nevertheless helpful to have.
You mean wrong intuition?
Yeah, it's kind of you cannot really prove, it's not a proof, but it's just some intuitive notion. So let's say your cost your VT is bounded by B, so this is the case of the bounded cost. And let's say your rate is R, so you can transmit R bits, and the channel is noiseless. Then let's just use this uniform quantizer. So you just the uncertainty after you send that value is going to be b divided by 2 to the r. And the best you could do, in fact, with this strategy is, again, just cancel what you observe, where xt now is not, xt hat is not the true system state, but a quantized version of it. And then this is a strategy to keep this bounded. So that would be your, after you apply this control, that would be the value that you need to keep bounded. So to keep it bounded, then indeed you need at least log a bits. And it's not a proof, obviously, but it kind of helps to understand why this indeed is the absolute minimum. In stochastic case, so when the noise is not bounded, actually even that was not known in this particular setting. So even in this particular setting where the noise is unbounded and not Gaussian, even this sense seems that it was not known previously.
So there are two parts. You're saying that you need at least log A and that log A is enough. So.
Right, you need at least log A. And so log A is not enough. You need at least, actually you need more than log A in order to be able to stabilize the system.
Right, but when you say what part was not known, for which side, which of the inequalities?
neither of the, for this particular mean square cost, neither was known, neither was proven. And people have, of course, come across this log A in various settings. In bounded case, it was known, and in Gaussian case, it was known. But in this particular setting where the noise is just arbitrary IID, even this was not known.
But you know, general noise is harder than bounded noise. So
yeah, exactly. So that's why I'm saying.
So in this direction, it must have. So the fact that you cannot control if R less than log A.
Right.
That's. I mean, if you know it for bounded noise.
I see what you are saying. Okay. So when they consider bounded noise, then they consider other stabilizability criteria. So not this one. Right, so it's everyone who looks at this problem, they look at it slightly differently. So when they look at bounded version, they look sometimes at the maximum of deviation, and then it's a different setting. Like it doesn't really apply. It doesn't really apply here. Other comments?
For the achievability, do you have a tail bound on the noise for any noise that's really fine?
Yeah, for the achievability, we do need some regularity assumptions, yeah. So unfortunately, yeah, we cannot, we do need to assume something about the density. For the converse, we just need to assume that the density exists. For the achievability, we need to assume something more. So we need to assume that it's sufficiently smooth.
But no moment bounds or assumptions?
No moment bounds, just the smoothness assumption, yeah. So to emphasize again, the lower bound does not impose any assumptions on the structure of the code, and it holds as long as the noise process is memoryless and has a density. So we do not assume here that the codes are linear, memoryless, or simple to implement. So it's an information theoretic approach. So we quantify the best fundamental trade-offs possible. Within a general class of causal strategies. And of course, the very important question that we need to ask next is, can we really achieve or come close to that bound in practice? And in this direction, we show that indeed we can. And this is our achievable scheme. So it's a very simple scheme. In fact, it's quite remarkable that it works. So what it does is we have the controller. It just estimates. It just produces the best estimate given everything it had observed before up to that moment, and then the encoder it instead of sending the value of xt, it just sends the value of the difference between the true system state and the controller's belief about the system state, which is called innovation. So it sends the quantized value, so Q denotes quantization of this difference. And the controller then, what it does after it receives this update, this quantized value of innovation, it just takes its prior belief and it adds this quantized value of innovation. And it's very simple scheme. And the most amazing thing about it is that it actually works. In that it actually approaches very, very closely this lower bound that I just showed. And the quantizer actually that we use here is very simple. It's just a uniform scalar quantizer. Or when we go to vector systems, it's just a lattice quantizer. So the simplest thing that you can imagine.
So would it be possible to compute this X hat in reality? I mean, it sounds like it's very complex.
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. Yes, you can compute it. Yeah, in fact, you don't really need to do that. You just need to take, even taking the mean, so the mean of XT given the current observation works. Works pretty well. So you don't really need all that history.
Is that a rigorous statement you just made, or just?
Yeah. It's. I mean, in the proof, yeah, that's what we do. In fact, yes. Okay, and then the upper bound. So the difficult part about this is the analysis, and our contribution here is that we're able to analyze this system rigorously, and this is the upper bound, which says that there exists a quantizer achieving cost whose output entropy is bounded as follows. So the first two terms here coincide with the lower bound, so the rate cost function. And then you have two penalty terms. So the O1 term, this is a finite block length penalty. So it measures the penalty due to the fact that you are not operating at infinite, in the limit of infinite block lengths. And we have an exact formula for that in the paper here. I didn't put it. And then the second term gives you a penalty that vanishes when the cost is approaches the minimum value. And otherwise, it increases, but it's always bounded by a constant. Okay, so it's constant times this difference, actually it's the minimum between a certain constant times this difference and another constant. Okay, so the difference between, so what it tells us is that the gap between what is truly achievable and that lower bound is explicitly bounded by this result. And if you plot this, what you obtain, in fact, is something quite remarkable, because it's I was very surprised when I saw it for the first time, that it's very, very close. So these two curves are very close. And this is perhaps the worst case in a certain sense, because here we are using it's scalar system. So it's uniform scalar quantizer. So the block length here is 1. So this first term, O1, that is the penalty due to the block length, is the worst possible. Yet, as you can see, the gap between the lower and the upper bound is really, really tiny. So here it's less than half knot. It vanishes further if you approach this low-cost limit. That's a major insight, that the information theoretic bound, converse bound that we showed, in fact, has operational meaning. We show that at least in this setting of uniform scalar, lattice variable length quantization, in fact, you can approach it quite closely. And now let me spend a few minutes discussing extensions of this work. I just showed you a very baby version of it. But in fact, there are many extensions, some of which we already explored, and many of them are subject of future work. So first, let's look at vector systems. So I was just mostly focusing on scalar systems before, but really all these results carry over to vector systems. So in the vector system case, so xt, ut, and vt are all vectors, and then the system parameters are a and b, which are known, a and b, which are known matrices, and the goal is the same. So we would like to optimize the control strategies, control and coding strategies, in order to achieve a certain cost. And then the cost functions that we can handle with this technique are actually include not only this mean square cost that I showed previously, but also this generalization, which is called the linear quadratic regulator. So what it does here, it also puts a cost on control. So it penalizes the accuracy of our control in terms of system state, which is this term, but it also imposes a cost on how much energy we are spending. And this is called linear quadratic regulator. It's a classical penalizer used in control literature, and it's just nice that we are able to treat this case as well. And more generally, our lower bound looks like this. So we have the sum of non-stable eigenvalues of the system matrix A here, and then we have this additional term. So that's the absolute minimum in this case that you need, and then depending on how low your target cost is, then you need to pay that many more bits. So nu is the number of unstable eigenvalues of the matrix A, and B mean is the minimum cost attainable without rate constraints. So that used to be variance of V, remember, in the scalar case. So now it's something else which still can be computed, and it's well known what this B mean is. Then mu here is some matrix, which is again a known function of the system parameters. And if we particularize this to mean square error and to a system that has n unstable nodes, then what we recover looks almost as what we saw before in the context of scalar system. Sure.
Do you need A to be diagonalizable, or can you get around that?
Oh, no, we don't need A to be diagonalizable. No. Yeah, so the only... because you can, you can apply Jordan decomposition, and you can transform the system into a system that is. So the only assumption that we impose on A and B is that it's controllable, which again is a standard assumption in control literature. Okay, so if, as long as the pair AB is controllable, then we are able to treat this case. Other questions? Okay, and so it extends to vector case, and it also extends to what they call in control partially observed control. So in this case, the sensor, instead of observing the full system state xt, it only observes a noise corrupted version of xt, so yt. So it only has a noisy observation of the system state. And the question is, what can we say about this system? And the way we model it is the following. The system is linear, and the observation is just scaled version of the system state plus some additive Gaussian noise. And actually, in this case, we actually do need to assume that VT and WT are Gaussian processes. And so it's, in this particular case, we actually do need to assume Gaussianity.
Design the sensor, or
a
sensor is given?
Yeah, the sensor is given. So what? What we're given is that YT. So that's the observation that we have access to. We cannot design the design the system. Yeah, what we are designing is encoder and controller here. And then the key to solving this case actually is the separation of estimation and quantization. Which says that the optimal encoder separates into the optimal estimator, followed by an optimal quantizer. And this result is kind of classical. It's Wolf and Zeev, 70s. And then, so once you do that, then what happens is that the encoder, you first need to just estimate, produce the best estimate of the system state given everything you have observed, and then you do the same thing we did before, except that now we apply this quantization strategy to those system state estimates rather than the true system states. Okay, and so that's what the second bullet says. That now instead of quantizing the system state, we are quantizing the process of system state estimates, which is generated by the Kalman filter. So there are well-known recursive formulas of how you can do that. Yeah, so the encoder still quantizes the innovation. Now the innovation is not the difference between only now the innovation is the difference between the observer estimate and the controller estimate, rather than the controller estimate and the true state as we did before. Okay, and then another generalization we did with people in this room is to systems where the gain is unknown, so which we modeled as follows. So here, instead of A being a known matrix, we assume that it's not known or known imprecisely. And the way we model it, we model it by saying, okay, AT is a random process which is independent from the additive noise of the system. And this problem is remarkably more difficult, so much more challenging than the standard control setting that I showed before. And nevertheless, these techniques can be extended, and the interesting things can be said also about this problem, which is quite remarkable. Okay, another extension that we did is to control over a noisy channel. So even though our converse result applies to noisy channels, so that's what this bullet says, that the impossibility result applies regardless of whether the channel is noiseless or noisy. So as long as the capacity of this channel is less than the rate cost function, we cannot control this system at cost B. But in the achievability direction, what I showed really was noiseless quantization scheme. So a very natural and very practically important question is, can we say anything about how closely this bound can be approached over noisy channels? And in full generality, this is still an open problem, very interesting, very challenging open problem. But we did some baby steps in this particular case towards the solution. The challenge here is that the techniques, the classical information theoretic techniques that we use in communication are not applicable because whenever you make an error due to channel noise, then it can result in unbounded cost. So instead of relying on those classical techniques, What we propose to do here, we propose to use joint source channel coding. And an example that we consider is the following. So here we are sending one sample over two channel uses. So this is this spiral is a variant of a space filling curve. And so our goal here is to map the real line to the plane. So a naive scheme would be repetition. So you just repeat and you send the same symbol twice, and that would result in this diagonal line. And a more interesting technique would be to use a nonlinear mapping. And the mapping that we chose to use here is actually due to Shannon and Kotelnikov, again, a classical scheme. So it's a mapping that maps a line to this plane, and it feels better in space than the naive repetition. And what we observed is that in fact it does better than repetition. So this the blue curve here is the repetition scheme, the linear. And the linear repetition scheme, and the black curve here is the nonlinear spiral-based scheme, and then the red curve is the converse result, the absolute minimum that we can achieve. So there is still a gap, which we hope we'll be able to close. But the one important observation is that there is actually a region of channel SNRs here where the system cannot be controlled with the naive technique, but it can be controlled with this nonlinear joint source channel coding. So it's,
it's fascinating, and I really want to understand it. So where this fits into your flowchart is that's the, you do this thing before you send the information over the channel, this spiral thing?
Oh, this is your encoder, right? So
that's before you send it.
Yeah, exactly. So that's.
So you take your. And what's the intuition for why it's helpful to do this?
Why it's helpful?
Yeah. Can you again explain the setting where you're doing this so you have the.
Yeah, the setting is that. So the communication channel. Let's go back to, I don't know where I had this picture somewhere. Yeah, here. Okay, so the model is that this channel is now a particular channel that is given to you, and this channel takes as an input. You can have two channel uses. So you observe a scalar value here, but you have two channel uses to send it over. So you are mapping a real line to a plane here. Right, so you're sending one sample over two channel uses. And the question is, how do we design this encoder and decoder mappings for this particular channel? Right, and then naively, what you can think of, okay, we have two channel uses, so I can just repeat, so I can just send twice my sample, my observation. I can scale it properly according to my power constraint and just send it twice. And a less obvious technique would be to have some more intelligent mapping.
But again, why a spiral and not something like a piano curve?
Oh, that's a great question. We are not claiming that this is in any way optimal. It's just a proof of concept that you can do better with joint source channel coding techniques. You can obtain gains. Absolutely, we are not claiming in any way that this is optimal.
So what does the channel do though? So do
the channel added, yeah, the channel adds Gaussian noise. Yeah.
So then you sort of try to do nearest neighbors.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the decoder just so right. So you send this into the channel and the channel describes this. So it shifts a little bit what you receive, and then you just project it onto the nearest.
Could I take you back to the one slide earlier?
Uh-huh.
Because you said separation techniques do not work. I don't understand. I mean, right?
So what do I mean by separation-based techniques? Okay, this is from separation means that first you quantize, So you discretize your source, uh-huh. and then you send over this discretized version over the noisy channel. So what happens if you have an error there is that you have this. You always, whenever you communicate over a noisy channel, you always have this non-zero error probability. So the probability that you confuse the encodings of those two points. And it screws up completely the control, because control systems are extremely sensitive to memory. So that's why it doesn't work here. So you need to do something much more sophisticated than just
that. And the reality of the situation you're modeling is that the channel itself allows you to transmit real numbers. It's just that
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, the constraint here, of course, is that it's a power constraint. That we are constrained by power, by the transmitter power. So we cannot just blow it up.
But then there's some theorem that says if the channel is discrete, mm-hmm. you simply can't. Discrete with noise?
If the channel is discrete, no. You can do still. You can do separation, but it's not going to work. Because still, yeah. If the channel is discrete,
work in the sense that it's even unstable, or just that it's not optimal.
I just don't know how to do it. It's an open problem. Okay. Information theorists know how to do it for communication.
Okay.
Right? So you quantize and then you send. But in control, you are always going to have this non-zero error probability, and that kills you.
Which
yeah. Okay. And I guess my time is about to run out, right? So I don't really have.
You have 10 minutes.
I have 10 minutes. Okay. Okay, then I do have some time to tell a few words about our proof techniques. And so let's look at this problem again. So let's go back to the very beginning and look at what we are trying to consider here. So we are trying to find the minimum, or to find the lower bound to the minimum of this expression, which is over all coding strategies allowing full use of the memory of the past. So it seems very complicated, and it is. And moreover, the distributions of these xi's are complex to describe. So it's not, you cannot just take information theoretic techniques and say this is what you need to do, because it's very difficult to describe the distribution of these guys. And moreover, the control action at previous time affects the data to be encoded at next time instance. So it's a At first glance, this problem is really, really challenging. So how do we approach it? Well, we use the combination of old and new techniques. So you use a classical technique from control, the dynamic programming principle. So we assume that, let's assume that control actions U1 to UT minus 1 have already been chosen, and then the question is how to choose UT. So this kind of splits up the problem into smaller problems. So now this is fixed. So the only thing you need to minimize is what happens at the very last step. So we evaluate that, and then we continue this recursion. We deepen the backward recursion until we reach time zero. And again, it's easier said than done, because to evaluate, even after we have splitted the problem up like this, it's still not trivial to evaluate each of those terms. We use a combination of techniques. So we introduce a certain conditional distortion rate function. So it's a minimum between x and its best representation, subject to a conditional mutual information constraint. And the good thing about this is that this particular function is a convex optimization problem. It's well studied in information theory, so we can draw upon that wisdom to treat this problem. And as I said, it's really a combination of techniques. So we derive new bounds to distortion rate function. So this is okay. That's the minimum we all use of the best representation of X plus U, given, you know, U. So this reflects back to this one of the biggest challenges that we have in this problem is that the control action U, you know, at point T can affect future states. So this is how we are able to deal with it through this new information theoretic lower bounds. And then we apply classical Shannon's lower bound, which is a bound due to Shannon on information theoretic distortion rate function. And we also use entropy power inequality, which says that if X and Y are independent, then we can split up the sum of the entropy power of X plus Y into two terms. And so applying these techniques to our and dynamic programming principle, we are eventually able to derive that bound. And let me say a few words about achievability, which was most striking to me. So why does it really work? It was very surprising to me that it actually works. There are several reasons for this. So first is encoding is variable length. So what it means is that instead of assuming that we have a fixed number of representation points to represent our source, instead we are fixing the average length of our encoding. So which means that our quantizer really here has a countably infinite number of representation points. So the average bit length of our descriptions is bounded, but at each particular instance, you can have a very, if your source realization is particularly unfavorable, you can have a very long bit string representing that realization. So that's one reason. And another reason is that the controller receives the quantized signal noise-free. Right? So as I said, when we have noisy channels, we only have very, really partial results. So we don't know yet how to do it over noisy channels. Very interesting research direction. Then a couple more reasons. A channel lower bound is, in fact, tight. When distortion is low, and actually more recently, we were able to show a bound that is universal in distortion. So you can bound the difference between distortion rate function and Shannon lower bound universally in D. So that's the most recent result that we have. And moreover, lattice quantization is almost optimal if the distortion is not too large. So really, it's a combination of all these effects that makes this very simple scheme work. And yeah, the difficult part is the analysis of this. And for this, we really need some sophisticated techniques that use smoothness of these distributions. And so because the difficulty here is that even though I specified explicitly for you the scheme, it's still hard to analyze because the distributions arising at each step are induced by previous quantized values. So it's kind of tricky to come up with analytical results. I'm guessing, fortunately, I don't have much time to go into detail about optimization, about how we did that. So let me go to the end. Yeah, so the main contribution here are explicit converse result for the rest cost trade-off in linear stochastic control, which applies in the general class of codes that take full advantage of the memory, not constrained to be linear or have any other particular structure. The converse can be approached by a very simple quantizer that only quantizes the innovation, and the results do not require the system noise to be bounded or Gaussian. Lots of exciting open problems. For example, what do we do if we are not allowed variable rate quantization? So, which is in practice often happens that your quantizer has finite dynamic range, meaning that you have only m representation points. You cannot really say, okay, if I have a bad noise realization, let me just use a little bit more bits. So what if you don't have that ability? Then can we say something? Can we show whether we can approach that lower bound using fixed rate quantization? Control over noisy channels in general, not solved. And control with random communication delays, also an interesting direction. Yeah, and more recently, actually, we looked at this control over noisy channels. Again, a particular class of noisy channels, namely packet drop channels. So those channels, they look at the input, and then they drop the entire packet, or they transmit it with some probability, noiselessly. And then, so these techniques generalized to that case. Beyond that, we still don't know, and we are still very curious what happens. So let me just thank all the collaborators, some of who you know very well. Thanks for your attention.
Any questions? Additional? Okay. So Victoria is here and Kelly tomorrow evening. So, thank her again.